Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In a virtual press event this week, three experts from the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University shared their thoughts about the 2020 election process, what worked, what didn't, and where we go from here. Mac McCorkle, a veteran Democratic political consultant, said one clear takeaway is the fallibility of the polls.
Polling is in crisis. It's got a challenge. You know, it's almost like you think of polling as being out of the era when we had three networks and everybody was at home and you could call them on a landline. And polling's been trying to adjust by doing online polling rather than telephone polling and various other things. But it's getting to be more and more of a challenge, harder to find a sample that can be trustworthy. I agree also that Trump is a disruptor to this kind of system, so that I think polling probably still is accurate when you have an Obama versus a Romney or Obama versus a McCain. But Trump is a different figure, always kind of pushing the envelope of expectations. But people need to understand polling is a necessarily open system. It is not something where systematically the pollster knows or should know really what the turnout is going to be. That's got to be based on historical assumptions. And this time, this was unprecedented turnout that they tried to account for. I think the other thing that I would say about polling that is bothersome, and now I'll hit some of my brethren on the progressive side, is this obsession with polling to the idea that Nate Silver or someone can tell you about how the polling, you know, what is really happening and the probabilities of all this. And actually, when you read Nate Silver, he tries to back off of all that probability game. But I think there's a false precision assumption about polling that we've simply got to get rid of. And I think especially on the Democratic side or liberal side, you see this, oh, Nate Silver said we're going to win. And I just think that's getting more and more foolish as the challenges of polling get direct. Exit polling is even worse in my view. So I will say though, that really quick, I did look up the New York Times exit poll. And just for people who are interested, they estimate that the white vote was 64% in North Carolina. The black vote was 24, which is a little above the state average. Hispanic Latino, even though that gets talked a lot about, only registers at 5%. That's going to keep going up, but it's still at 5%. And then Asian 2% and other 5%. And again, the numbers that you don't know if you want to trust completely, but Biden scored below 32% with whites. And that usually is very problematic for Democrats in North Carolina. Obama got up to 35% of whites, as well as a big African-American turnout in 2008. And slip below that again, approximately on that. But again, I really think that exit polling needs to be treated with a lot of grains of salt.
Guy Uriel Charles, co-director of Duke Center on Law, Race, and Politics, said for him, another takeaway was that Trump's coarse rhetoric simply did not turn off voters. And Charles believes there were some erroneous assumptions about race.
People have thought about the fact that Trump comes across as a racist. And the assumption was, look, the appeal that he would have to people of color and to whites and to the country would be rejected as a whole. You know, there's another way that race comes into the picture. It wasn't a full repudiation by whites, but also not a full repudiation by folks of color. And that complicates our racial narrative. Right? How do we think about the fact that he still had some appeal to, you know, as Dean Kelly said, I mean, this is a closely divided country. He still had some appeal to a large percentage of voters, including a smaller but distinctive percentage of voters who are voters of color. And those are things that we're going to have to wrestle with in the years to come.
Professor McCorkle agrees with Charles on that point and believes political parties cannot assume how a certain block of voters will cast their ballots as North Carolina grows increasingly diverse.
The Latinx or Hispanic vote in North Carolina, it leans to the Democrats. And I think that would be in support of that. You find support in that in the data, but it is not anywhere near like the African-American vote in North Carolina. The African-American vote in North Carolina Democratic Party is the base. It's the biggest population grouping in the Democratic Party. So I think, and based on other states, you're going to see a lot of interest, especially if it's post-Trump, in trying to peel off even more of the Hispanic or Latinx vote to the Republicans. Now, the other interesting little tidbit in North Carolina is the Lumbee Indian vote in Robeson County. Robeson County has been one of those counties that switched back and forth and has been a national bellwether in the last three elections and continues to be a national bellwether, meaning that it went for Obama twice, but it's now gone for Trump and went big for Trump. And that probably was a strong Lumbee Indian vote. So not just white rural vote. Trump was able to win a very mixed race county in Robeson, which I think people should be interested in.
Judith Kelly, dean of the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke, has made a career of studying democracy and international election observation. For her, democracies often rest on political norms, but when politicians flout those norms, as we saw this year, it can endanger our fragile democracy.
So there are certainly ways that over time we may be able to fix some of these issues. But at the end of the day, I think it has to be about a conversation among citizens about what values we actually hold dear in the long run that we want to hold on to that are more important than immediate short-term gains.
But the bottom line this election year, according to Kelly, is that individual votes mattered. And that is something that all sides should feel good about.
It has to be a win overall that more people have turned out than have for decades in America. And, you know, America has for a long time been trailing other mature democracies, and they just scratch their heads and go, why are so few people turning out? And I think that if anything, this election might lead to a continuing trend of that, because it is becoming increasingly clear to people that their vote matters. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we'll draw some kind of conclusion here that one person won, just like we did last time around. But the most obvious conclusion is that this country is so evenly divided, so in some ways so closely divided, and how the election actually happens to come out, then we think, oh, well, that's how it is. This side won. But really, it's really 50-50. And when that's the case, then turnout becomes so much more important. And I think people have felt that this time around. People stood in some cases in lines for long periods of time because they believed that their vote was going to matter, and they were proud of casting that vote. And I think that is something to build on.
Coming up, we'll hear from the dean of North Carolina's congressional delegation about the election results and the work that lies ahead once Congress reconvenes. Stay with us.